Hi and welcome to Social Work Sorted, the podcast. I'm Vicky Shevlin. I host this podcast and I lead Social Work Sorted, an online platform of resources for newly qualified social workers. I offer CPD accredited training for universities and organisations, online masterclasses, resources and a brand new membership, The Collective, which is for newly qualified social workers and students. All the information you need to know is in the show notes. If you are new to this podcast, then you are very welcome. And if you are returning from another episode, thank you so much for being here. If this podcast is useful for you, helpful in your practice, if you take something from it every time you listen, then please, it would be so helpful if you could leave a rating and or a review, or if you could recommend it to somebody else, share it with someone who might also find it useful. In today's episode, which I should add is recorded from my home, not a fancy podcasting studio, and it's raining today. So I've tried to mute my microphone when I was having a chat with this guest. But if you hear a little bit of background noise, it's the rain on my windows. One day I'm sure I'll be somewhere fancy for recording these podcasts. But for now, these are the things that we might just have to deal with. So thanks for your patience for that in advance. But in today's episode, I am talking to Andy Newman, who is the branch secretary for the GMB union. And I'm talking to Andy because, if you are not aware, there have been social workers in disagreements with their employers at Swindon Borough Council, and those disagreements led to strike action. And I was really interested in that. I'm a social worker like you. I didn't particularly get an introduction to unions or being a member of a union when I was at university. I think there was some discussion of it. It wasn't left out of the conversation, but I didn't feel like it applied to me because I was a student at the time. And then when I entered into practice, I was actually just so focused on getting through my first year and dealing with the influx of information. It wasn't something that was a priority for me. But as my career has progressed, so has the greed of this current government, and strike action across a number of industries has increased over the last 12 months. And I often find myself thinking about social workers and strike action and the complications that come with that. I often find myself comparing social workers with maybe professionals in healthcare when you see NHS strikes, and thinking a lot about the public perception of social workers versus, for example, junior doctors or nurses, and how strikes might be perceived or referred to if they occur. And so when I read that these social workers in Swindon were taking strike action, I got in touch with Andy because I wanted to know more. I wanted to be able to share that on this podcast. I get asked a lot about strike action. I get asked a lot about my opinion from new social workers about, will social workers go on strike and what would that look like? And it's definitely not as simple as just all social workers decide to go on strike, because there are different unions that social workers can be members of. I'm going to be talking a bit more about strike action in a lot of, I've got more episodes coming about strike action because I know that it's something that you are all interested in at this stage in your social work journey and you want to know more about it. So I'm really grateful for Andy for speaking to me, talking to me about what has been happening. So I'm really grateful to Andy for speaking to me, for sharing a bit more insight into what has been happening. And I think this will be a really helpful episode for those of you who have those questions about strikes and want to know a little bit more about what's behind the headlines or the articles. I really hope that you find this conversation interesting. Andy, thank you very much for joining me today on the podcast. For anybody listening, and I'll do a little intro at the start anyway, but for anyone listening who doesn't know anything about unions, anything about you or your job role, could you give a bit of an overview of who you are, what you do, and what led you to here?
Yeah, so I'm the branch secretary of the GMB, which is a general union, which means that we have a lot of members who are in local authorities, for example, social workers, but also traffic wardens, office staff, leisure centres, all of those things. But also we have a high proportion of our members who are school support staff, and also a number of staff in the private sector, in factories particularly. We have people in the utilities like gas and water, and ASDA is a workplace organised by GMB. So we have a lot of general experience. And what I find is actually being able to compare the practices of the private sector and the public sector quite useful, because both of them are in their own silo and they assume that their culture is the only culture. And it's quite useful sometimes, particularly with HR in councils, to be able to say, well, actually, there is another way of doing this. Like the private sector do it like this. And often other ideas are being generated, whereas local authorities tend to only learn from each other. So being able to inject that is quite helpful. In terms of my own journey to where I am, if you like, is that I am by profession an engineer, and I work full time for the union in an elected post. So some people work for the union because they've got a job with the union. I work for the union because I've been elected. And for the analogy I would make is between the senior managers of the council who work for the council and the councillors who've been elected by the general public to run the council. So there's two different ways of having the responsibility for the council, in the same way there's two different ways of having a position in the union.
And so the reason why I've invited you on the podcast to talk is because there are currently social workers planning, edit that bit out, it's my husband probably dealing with something useless. The reason why I've invited you on the podcast is because there are currently social workers planning strikes. And one of the questions I get asked a lot, because this platform is for newly qualified social workers, is how do social workers go on strike? People ask me why it isn't just all social workers that go on strike at one time. A lot of, and I didn't get this, I don't remember having this at any point in my social work education. Nobody told me. They told me about joining unions and the benefits of it, but I didn't know the ins and outs. And then I felt too stupid to ask. So that's what I would like to do today. I'd like to ask you the questions that a lot of people will feel like they're a bit stupid to ask, but they should know already. So I wonder if I could start with you just talking about what is happening at the moment and the social workers within your union that are planning strikes at the minute.
Okay. The first thing I would preface this is by saying that everybody that is in a public facing role, and particularly those who are dealing with people who might be challenging or troubled, definitely needs to be in a trade union, because allegations can be made, disciplinary proceedings, investigations can take place, which could threaten your career over issues which you may be entirely innocent, or where you've been misunderstood. And it can be a defining moment when you bring the union in, because of the experience we've got. And also we have access to solicitors, and in particular we have access to specialist solicitors that deal with compliance issues, professional registration and criminal issues, which I know all of us think that we'll never be involved in, but until the day when you are involved in it, and being innocent is no reason to think you won't get involved. So that's the first thing. But secondly, in particular, we have had a series of strikes in Swindon Borough Council, which relate to a group of workers in the emergency duty service who are advanced social workers, some of whom are approved mental health practitioners, AMPs, some are not. But these are the people that offer the emergency out-of-hours service. And in Swindon, it's a combined service covering both children's services and adult services, which isn't the case in all councils. And the reason why this particular group of workers, I mean, there's seven of them, so it's not a huge amount compared to the 60 or 70 social workers who work for Swindon. The reason why they are on strike is because there is an issue which affects only them. And it's one which affects them quite deeply, because there have been going on for a number of months and years a complex job and grading reorganisation with Swindon Borough Council, which saw these people lose their unsocial hours bonus. They were paid a 20% uplift on their salary because they work nights, weekends and bank holidays. And that 20% uplift was lost originally. There was a bit of an uplift in their original salary, but most of them were still going to be £3,000, £4,000 down. And obviously, they couldn't afford to and weren't prepared to put up with that. So we sought negotiation with Swindon Borough Council. We first approached them back in April, but the council really dragged their feet. I'm absolutely sure that this could have been resolved with goodwill on all parties, behind closed doors and without a strike, if they just got it and understood the urgency of the situation. But they didn't. They moved at a snail's pace. The result of which was, in the absolutely critical period of July and August, because the changes were due to come in 1st of September, in that absolutely critical period, nothing was done from the council during July. And then on the 5th of July, we balloted them for strike action, because the law requires you to have a postal ballot if anyone goes on strike action. And we learned that for all of August, all of the key managers of the council were going on holiday, and they put nothing in place to negotiate a solution. So the result of which is that we took a day's strike action on the 31st of August, and then took a subsequent five further days of strike action last week. To really, the purpose of strike action is to give a bit of a boot up the backside to the employer to get round the table and negotiate a solution, because strike action in its own isn't the solution. It's a way of incentivizing the management to come to a solution. And we're partially there, in that the money aspect has been resolved. I mean, what they've done is that they've increased the basic pay for each of these seven by £3,000 compared to the ones on days. But what we're currently seeking, before the dispute is finally signed off, is a legally binding agreement that £3,000 can't be taken away again. You know, because it'd be easy to give us £3,000 with one hand and take it away with another 3 months later when all the excitements die down. So yeah, we're seeking an agreement to stop that happening.
It's funny, isn't it? As you were talking, I was thinking, with every kind of thing that you share, I feel that injustice. I am somebody who would think, gosh, it's not an easy thing to do, to go on strike. It's not an easy thing to commit to. Number one, because it impacts, as a worker, it impacts your income. But also, as a social worker, you know how needed you are in that service. It's never, ever an easy decision. And I also find myself feeling that kind of real frustration to, I don't know anything else about the council, but that frustration that I felt in many other jobs around senior leadership of, you just don't get it. And why don't you appreciate what I'm doing? And don't you understand the impact of not appreciating me? But there will be social workers who listen and think, oh, would they not just get on with it? Why this? And to those people who might be listening, who might have that little doubt in their head because they've listened to something else, or they've heard someone else, or whatever their worldview is, those people who are listening are thinking, why would they bother? Why would they just not put up with it? Because they've got a little bit of something. Why are they fighting for more? What would you say?
Well, in reality, the choice wasn't between doing nothing and taking strike action to resolve it. Because what would have happened is that these are very highly skilled social workers, and also very highly skilled social workers who are prepared to work nights, weekends and bank holidays. And particularly those who've got the AMP qualification are incredibly highly sought after. So what would have happened is that the seven would have gone elsewhere to neighbouring local authorities. And Swindon Borough Council, instead of paying the people the 40 to 50,000 which they're currently paying them, would have ended up paying £80 an hour for agency workers. That's even assuming that they could get agency workers who are AMPs, who are a little bit like trying to recruit unicorns for night shift. So in reality, the social workers in this department were also defending the service, because Swindon Borough Council have done quite an extraordinary good job, in that it's been many years since they've had to use agency for their out of hours service. And I can assure you, from local authorities that I deal with, that is quite unusual. So they felt they were defending the service, and also they felt very underappreciated. And the initially, the when we suggested balloting from strike action, we didn't think there would actually be a strike. We thought that this would be an indication to the management that people were very serious and it needed to be sorted out. And they did have months to sort it out, but they just failed to do so. And that's why one of the unfortunate things about industrial action, if you like, is it does lead to a hardening of attitudes, because you end up into a confrontational mindset. And part of the skill that we have as trade unions is to be able to put that back together again, to talk to the members and say, well, actually, this may not be everything you want, but you've got actually more than you thought you would at the beginning. And say to the management, look, do you really want to continue to go down this route of confrontation? Or would you rather reach a compromise, which means that we can start put it all back together again? And that is nearly where we are. Yeah. With Swindon Borough Council, we're in the process of putting it back together again. And as I say, that over the money, we've come to an accommodation that I think is acceptable. But there has been a bit of a breakdown of trust on behalf of our members, which is why they want something in writing.
Yeah, which again, if you are a family in receipt of services from social workers, whether that is voluntary or statutory, that was me, I would want something from a social worker that said something in writing. So it's almost that, well, if we're not modelling that from senior leadership, giving that to social workers, what kind of practice are we then modelling authority wide, I suppose? So for people listening who are not currently in a union or they're thinking about joining, what are some of the steps that those social workers took from the point of them opening up the dispute? What is the step by step? So would they literally just pick up the phone to somebody? What's the process that leads to you getting into talks with people?
Well, we were quite lucky in this regard, in that one of the AMPs who was working for Swindon Borough Council had previously been a manager in the emergency duty service in Wiltshire Council, where we'd gone through a very similar thing the year before, where we hadn't taken strike action, but not with the social workers, but in fact the traffic wardens had gone on strike because they were also covered by the removal of the non-social hours package. And this particular member phoned us and said, Andy, it's happening again. And I said to her, well, we can stop this, but we need people to join the union. Because at that time, we had a few, but not all of the people in membership. And she went away, and because she'd had a previous good experience, she recommended that people join the GMB. I then had a Teams meeting with them, and they all joined. And I put it to them that initially I put it to them that actually if they balloted for strike action, I wasn't anticipating they would end up taking strike action, but I said, but balloting for strike action is in itself an indication to the management that you're very serious. And I was actually a little bit taken aback that they were running ahead of me, really, and said, no, if this doesn't get sorted out, we want to take strike action because we feel very aggrieved about this, not just for the money we're losing, but it's the lack of respect for their profession, that actually nobody in the senior management at the council had understood the job that they do. And the job that they do is really not only very responsible, but can be quite harrowing, because they have the power to section people. Sometimes they're dealing with situations of extreme violence. Sometimes they're dealing with vulnerable adults in danger of exploitation. They're dealing with children in quite harrowing safeguarding situations. And one of the difference from the out-of-hours service, I mean, I know that those things happens on days as well.
Yeah.
But two things that make it different is that out-of-hours, there's no manager. So they're advanced social workers taking a responsibility which would probably be taken by the team manager or the assistant team manager if it was on days. But also they're doing it in isolation, in that there is only there's no emotional support network, because they're on nights or weekends or bank holidays rather, there's just one of them on. So that is different from being on days and at least being able to phone a colleague and say, I've just had this really harrowing experience. I just need to share it with you for my own emotional support. The colleagues don't welcome that call at 3 o'clock in the morning. So in those respects, and as one of them said, there's even stuff which might seem quite trivial, but if you've got IT problems, if it's 4 o'clock in the morning on a bank holiday, you're on your own with those IT problems in a way that you're not if you're on the Teams in a day. So the job has got its own responsibilities and its own challenges, which are unique. And people just really didn't feel that the management got that. And our experience has also been quite extraordinary of how badly Swindon Borough Council have handled the strike in two regards. First of all, is that they told us that they were going to use agency workers to cover the strike, which is unlawful. And we produced a proper legal opinion for them showing that it's unlawful. And when I say lawful, I mean it's actually a criminal offence. And they said, well, our advice is different. And when we pressed them on their advice, is that they'd Googled it and they'd read gov.uk. And the advice they had from gov.uk actually said the opposite of what they were saying. But much, much more serious than that is that normally, when there's a strike action involving an emergency service, the unions negotiate what are called derogations. And this is easiest to explain with reference to the ambulance service, because we had a ambulance strike earlier in the year. And the striking ambulance workers, we invite to come to the picket line in their uniforms, and they have their ambulances parked near the pickets. And then, if there's a danger to life 999 call, they leave the picket line, get in the wagon, and they drive off from service. That's it. If it's a little Johnny's got his head stuck in a pot, they would not go, but they would say, we'll come to casualty and get that sorted out. So it is an emergency service. And all the way along, we had offered Swindon Borough Council to negotiate these derogations, and they just hadn't. And they said to us they got it covered. Now, we found out that they hadn't got it covered. And over two nights, on the 5th and 6th of October, four very concerning emergency calls, including a child referral from hospital, a call from the police was missed about a vulnerable female in danger of exploitation, and a nurse rang about a child who was presenting with worrying signs. All of those calls were missed, and this is something which is absolutely scandalous, because we offered to provide emergency service, and that is in fact why we have suspended the strike, because we didn't feel it was possible to continue with the strike. I mean, it's a very unusual situation for a union to suspend a strike, but we just didn't feel we could continue because of the safety aspects. And people were very cross about that, because they've got a right to take strike action, and the union had offered. Now, I have to say that since we brought this to the attention of the council, or more particularly since we brought it to the attention of the press, the council have been prepared to discuss derogations, but we've moved on, and we may be in sight of a deal. But we are very disappointed about that. And what they also did is, in response to us going to the press with these issues, which wasn't our first port of call. Initially, our members had contacted senior management to try and get it sorted out. But only when they got no response from senior management, we felt, well, the only way to do this is to go to the press, is that the management responded by blocking the IT access for all of the staff in the department, and also physically locking the office door. Well, actually, what they did is they took the key out of the key safe so that people couldn't access the office anymore. So this was a very aggressive response from them, and it looked to us like a cover-up, that they were actually more interested in preventing the social workers finding out what had happened than they were in addressing the safety aspects of what happened during the strike. So these are the type of things I said where there has unfortunately been a breakdown of trust, and it will take a while to rebuild that. But we have to do it. I mean, the staff, the management, the union, we do have to rebuild the trust because we can't let what's happened undermine this key service going forwards.
It's just, as I'm listening to you talk, it's just all like a lesson in what not to do, in how not to resolve something. And I hope that when it's so important, and it's important as in social work anyway, to establish context, but it's so important to establish context behind, because what people might see is just there's been a strike, and you don't go any further. You don't go any further to see what happened before that, what preceded strike action, or the attempts to resolve something before it then gets to what nobody wants to have at the end. But also then you still want to be able to have the capacity to take strike action, and that was really blocked. I'm wondering if, and it might not be the case, but given that you work with a number of different sectors, a number of different professionals, do you see a difference in the pressures on social workers within the union in comparison to other members, or do you see a difference based on the job role or the profession? You might not. I'm just interested to know.
At the end of the day, social workers are people, and then very much like everybody else. So I think there is an element where people in professional jobs, and particularly people in professional jobs dealing with vulnerable members of the public, whether they're adults or children, will obviously weigh their responsibility to their clients against anything else they take. And that may be a responsibility which sits heavier with social workers than with some other professions. I mean, clearly, well, I'll give you a good example of this, is that there is a statutory responsibility, for example, to provide social work service, and in particular, there's a statutory obligation to provide AMP cover out of hours, a 24/7, 365 service. There's also a statutory obligation to provide parking enforcement, but the public are not so worried, and are neither of the staff, if the parking enforcement obligation is not carried out. In fact, our experience of traffic warden strikes last year in Wiltshire was that the general public were rather supportive of the idea. Whereas, so obviously that will have an impact on how those traffic wardens see it, and social workers are not in the same position. But obviously the broader landscape is that we are seeing strike action from a lot of professions who have a lot of deep responsibilities, whether it's doctors or teachers or nuclear power engineers or gas fitters or whatever. I mean, from the point of view of the GMB, everybody is entitled to equality of respect, and we have the same attitude of supporting all of our members in exactly the same way. And unlike some other unions, everyone pays the same to the GMB, whether you're a bin worker or a nuclear scientist, or whether you're a social worker or a receptionist in the council, you will pay the same money to the GMB. And that is partly because it's fairer, but I think it also does mean that we do see everyone, that we give them the same service. So, because everybody is entitled to equality of dignity. And I think that's very much how we see it. But individuals will certainly have their own thresholds at which they're prepared to act. And one thing I have noticed with social workers, which might be different to some other professions, is that you do seem a very collegiate bunch, you know, that you do talk amongst each other with the team and share experiences and come up with a, I'm sure this isn't always the case, but the social workers I've dealt with, you do come up with a common position and try and sort things out as a team. And another thing which is unusual, I've noticed, is that certainly senior social workers are likely to have a network of contacts in other councils who they are comparing notes with, and are quite aware of. I've never come across a profession where everybody is so aware about what the pay rates are in all the neighbouring authorities that they might want to go and work for. For example,
Yeah, that's a, I've never thought of it that way, but yeah, I would always know somebody in so many other councils. And just to be clear as well, because as you were answering that question, I was thinking what I didn't intend for is to then make that comparison of one profession it is more needed than another profession, because actually that's the media feeds off that, don't they? They feed divide everybody and pit them against each other, and that wasn't my intention in asking that question really, so just to be
So
clear.
on that, Vicky, I mean, I think everybody does useful work, otherwise people wouldn't be paying them to do it. But the it's whether it's the acute consequences of someone's removing their work. So, for example, to take the example of traffic wardens or civil enforcement officers, is that for a 24-hour period, the impact of them going on strike might be quite limited. But if they're out for a long time, then you'll get chaos on the roads. The difference is with a social worker is that it could be that they're not being available for a 24-hour period, might unluckily hit with a crisis for a client, which means that it could have an immediate impact. So that's the difference. And I think that's what people are bearing in mind when they're contemplating whether they might take strike action. But also, as I said, why we would seek to negotiate with the management about emergency cover, but how that could be handled.
So for newly qualified social workers listening, I know you said at the start so many reasons why they should be in a union. If they're listening to this and feeling like they can't speak up about conditions, they can't speak up about pay, they can't speak up because all they're trying to do is get through their first year in social work and they're worried that they're not going to get through their ASYE or they're going to be treated unfairly. What would you say to them?
Well, firstly, everybody needs to be in a union if you're dealing with the public. Secondly, is that councils are quite bureaucratic organisations, and it's easy to end up in a situation where you're just wading through treacle trying to understand what the processes are. And one of the real advantages of being in a union, particularly one of the what we call the Green Book unions, the ones that are recognised in the local authorities, is that we will know the HR. Okay, so on an informal basis, you could phone your union, and your union could say, "Well, this seems to be ha being handled in a bit of a incompetent way or too bureaucratic a way. I'll ring HR." And then often a phone call to HR can lead to HR having a chat with the manager and the manager being set on a slightly different path for dealing with an issue. And that pays off enormously. There are also situations where people might be having a particular health challenge where you could, local authorities are very bureaucratic about how they deal with capability and sickness and health challenges. And you really need some help in dealing with that because, again, managers are advised by HR often tend to see these things as a tick box exercise. You just go through this meeting and go through that meeting. And because they're dealt with by policies and procedures, the humanity of it all can get lost. And really, it's only the union that is going to support the individual in those challenging circumstances as a human being rather than the bit of sausage going through the sausage machine. And we sometimes get extraordinarily good results of keeping people at work. And often it's just a question of slowing the process down, giving some people some time to breathe so that they get themselves in a better position so that they master what was hopefully a temporary point in their life. And you need that professionalism from a union. And I sometimes I get calls from people, and they're actually what they're phoning me for is not necessarily the specialist advice that we bring as a trade union, but just as an experienced person that's knows how the system works. And so it's actually informal advice about how they best can handle it. And what I find is, and this will almost certainly be the case with all social workers, is that you're all more than capable of dealing with the issues. if you're given a bit of guidance about how to deal with it best yourself. But getting that guidance and just getting some advice about actually what is an important issue, what isn't an important issue, how you handle a short-term health crisis or a short-term childcare crisis, how you deal with those things is you need to know what your possibilities are, and then given the right guidance, you can deal with it. And I really strongly recommend anybody to join a union for that purpose, because what I find is that we're really capable of keeping people in work, making their work happier, and resolving issues. And you know, it's so easy otherwise for people to get sucked into negative cycles about how they're dealing with their boss or how they're dealing with a work colleague that irritates them. And a conversation with the union, and we can often break them out of that negative cycle.
I've just got two more questions. The first is really about racism and anti-racism and being part of a union. So I'm white. I have always felt pretty comfortable in speaking up if I feel any sort of injustice at work, or there've been times I've been part of a union, there's times when I haven't been. There's currently research, I think it's from Community Care, that a huge proportion of Black and global majority workers are moving to agency because of racism within local authorities. And so I'm interested in the idea that whilst unions are for everybody, not everybody might feel like a union is for them. And I'm wondering what you'd say in response to that, or is there specific anti-racist leads within your union? Is that something that is a concern? Is that something that you're conscious of within the union?
Yeah, it certainly is. We have a broadly rural branch. I mean, people that who live in Swindon may not see themselves as broadly rural because it's a town of 200,000 people, but most of my patch is also Wiltshire. Is that it is an area which is more white British than a lot of other parts of the UK, and therefore that poses its own challenges for ethnic minorities where there are smaller support networks. I'm very fortunate that in my branch we actually have a woman that sits on our race equality. There's a self-organized group of Black and ethnic minority members in our southern region of the GMB, and sits on that, but is also chair of our regional equality forum and works for an anti-racism charity. And she does a fantastic job at bringing people in, make them feel welcome and supported. And what I would say is that I have observed in local authorities systemic racism. And what I've seen in, I won't name them, but two local authorities that I deal with, is a pattern of behaviour where Black or Asian people in middle management who've got the qualifications and experience are overlooked for people who have less experience and fewer qualifications than them and getting the promotions, and then are told that, oh, they're just not the right fit. Yeah. And in one case with a local authority, there was a training program that was actually specifically for people of color, and the position was given to a white woman instead, because the council said to this member of staff, well, we felt that the need for promoting white women was greater. But now, obviously, there are issues about how promoting white women obviously is. But this is a point where, you know, probably half of the senior directors in that council, people earning six-figure sums, were already women. Yeah. And none of them are Black. And they took funds for, hypothecated for training Black people and gave them to white people. And didn't even see that as a problem. So yes, I do think that the culture in councils, it can be very bad. And I think one of the things which I find very frustrating, and I think partly might explain this, is that people who work in the management and in HR in councils think that they're the good guys, and because they're working in the public sector and they're providing public services. And because they're the good guys, they can't imagine that they're doing anything wrong. So they're not open to the idea that they might be in the bad guys. And I think this also partly explains sometimes why local authorities get themselves in a muddle with trade unions if there are strikes, because their mental image is that strikes is only things that happen with bad employers like Victorian mine owners and people like that. So if they're having a trouble with the unions, it must be because the union's wrong. Yeah, because that contradicts their idea of themselves as being the good people. So I think there needs to be a little bit of a wake-up call for councils that they need to recognise is that, yeah, maybe they're the good guys, but also they're multi-million pound corporations employing loads and loads of directors on six-figure salaries and that have got their own institutional interests and who could be entirely blind to the obstacles that they're throwing up for their black and ethnic minority staff. And that can be even more so in councils where the majority of the population is white around them, because they may think, well, we don't even have a problem locally. Well, yes, you do have a problem, and the problem is you think you haven't got a problem.
Yeah, no, that's I think it's always helpful to talk about, and I talk about that from a place of my white ignorance as well, but
yeah.
I know from colleagues it wouldn't be fair to have a conversation about strikes without us then unpicking the systemic racism which then impacts that. Is there anything that you would say? Again, most of the people listening to this podcast will be newly qualified social workers, but they might share it. It might go wider. And to people, you're saying, you know, at the heart of it, social workers are people. Well, so are the people who are in senior leadership and middle management. And they all have their own pressures as well from above, ultimately caused by this horrendous government. What would you say to those people if they were listening? If you were, you know, if there is just happens to be someone listening who is senior leadership in a council at the moment, listening to what's happening in Swindon or what's happened, listening to what has the way employees have been treated, if there was one key message that you could send to them, what would that be?
Okay, well, I always like to think of this as my fork in the road speech, because I think that with the senior leadership of any organization, they sometimes misunderstand unions. Yeah, is that because our primary purpose is to serve our members, but often serving our members is best achieved by working in a collaborative and helpful way with the management of an organization to make that organization succeed. And if you're the manager of an organization, if you're leading a social work department in a council, or if you're more senior leadership of that, you know, then I would say work with the unions and we will help you make that organization succeed. But if you're not working with the unions, and if you're exploiting or denigrating or disrespecting or taking money away from our members, then from the GMB's point of view, is we'll take the other fork in the road. We will either take the fork in the road of being the collaborative people who will work and help you, or we will be a nightmare for you. Yeah, because we will take actions that you don't like with an aim to bringing you back to the fork in the road and then as both walking down the good path again. Because we don't take industrial action or go to the press or do things which upset employers for the sake of it. We do with it, but to incentivize them to work with us to solve the problems. And we only really go down the route of conflict if an employer is not prepared to work with us to solve a problem. Because what they're basically saying then is, we don't care that your members have got a problem. And well, we do care that our members have got a problem, and we'll do everything we can to solve that problem. So that is what I would say to those people. And I think that over the years, I've dealt with a lot of employers, and some of them have gone down the column A approach of working with us in a very good way. Some of them have gone down the column B approach of having a confrontation. And I'm pleased to say there are also people that have gone down the column B confrontation approach who have ended up in column A and working very well with us at a later stage. So that is the message I would give to them.
Thank you. Thank you very much for joining me on the podcast today. And I suppose thank you to those social workers, because for me as a social worker, when I see other social workers, which we don't see that often, or I think we'll see an increase in it now, but it's not something that we see as commonly as maybe, or as maybe we have with the NHS. It's just important to me to remember the sacrifice that it takes to go on strike, first of all, for, you know, your wages, your relationships, like you said, within your council, the responsibility that you have to the people that you work alongside, it's definitely not the easy option. So I wish that it hadn't happened. I wish it wasn't, you know, in the process now, but it's also inspiring in a way, because we have to start somewhere, don't we, in terms of standing up for what's happening across social work. And I do think a lot of people, whether or not it's massively publicized or not, people in social work know about this, and it will grow and grow. So yeah, I think it shouldn't be the way that we get hope, but it does offer hope, I think.
Thanks for that. But just on a final point is that, just to remind people that currently every GMB member who works for a local authority is, well, it's certainly in Southern Region, is being balloted for potential strike action over the National Pay Award. And it's a different picture across the country, because in some places we're only balloting people where we've got a good proportion of members. In the Southern Region, which is basically England south of the M4, is that we're balloting everyone who's a GMB member. So if people are dissatisfied with the current National Pay Award, then by joining the GMB, they get a chance to vote if they want to take strike action on that.
That's really helpful. I'll put all the information for that in the show notes as well, so people can see. Thank you so much.
My pleasure.
I hope that you enjoyed listening to that conversation, that you took some new information away from that. Maybe it made you think or reflect whether you're in a union or not. It was interesting for me, actually, because there's still a lot I feel like I don't know or need to read more about in terms of my rights as a union member, in terms of how that functions within social work. And conversations in social work, for me, it just always comes back to humanity and human relationships. And what I hope that you don't take from this conversation is, I guess, a damaging binary viewpoint that all senior leadership and management are effectively bad and all social workers are good, and anything that leads us down a route of this binary narrative, it has to be one way or the other. People are either this or that. One profession is more important than another profession. It all seeks to divide, and I don't think that is where we want to be as social work. So yeah, I hope that you took something from this, but I hope you're able to reflect on any of the feelings that come up for you, any of the thoughts that you have, any of the beliefs that maybe it challenges or reaffirms, and all the details about this particular strike, some news articles I'll put in the show notes. If you've got questions specifically for Andy, he said you can send them to me and I will forward them on to him. And as I said at the start, if this was helpful for you, then it's amazing to have feedback, whether you want to email me, whether you want to leave a review, leave a rating, and there's loads of ways to get in touch with me. Again, all in the show notes. So like I do at the end of every episode, I just want to encourage you to slow down, close your eyes if it feels comfortable, take a breath, enjoy a moment of calm just for you. Thank you so much for listening, and take care.